Zero Edward Prime, the 25th of October, 2518, continued.
Gusula is Gusula, and one encourages Gusula. One doesn't discourage it. But if what one is doing is not truly Gusula, then by all means, let's not be so concerned about it. If one is fooling around with some kind of practice, and if one is honest with oneself and realizes that one doesn't really know what one is doing, and if one can't find any Gusula, any true Gusula in it, which I think may often be the case with many of us, then the sooner that one dropped it, the better. If one's fooling around in the dark, and in fact, how will one know the degree to which one is having Gusula if one doesn't have enough detachment from one's practice, however right or wrong it may be, to start developing sati? Because it's only by developing sati that we begin to see the difference between Gusula and Agusula. And one can't begin to develop sati if one is clinging to some practice or other, thinking that this practice is going to bring one more sati. Wrong practice. So if one is involved in some practice that one is performing, practicing, because one thinks this is going to bring me results faster than any other way, then one's right off on the wrong track right from the beginning. That kind of practice one can happily drop. And the moment you drop it, it's possible for there to be awareness. When I say at the moment you drop it, I don't know if you know what I mean, but for all of us, regardless of whether we've been involved in any form of wrong practice or not, we all do have wrong practice every day of our lives. It mightn't show by our bodily action. We mightn't do anything that looks strange, like walking very slowly or whatever. We might be leading a perfectly ordinary, normal life, but we still have wrong practice all the time at different levels and in different ways, because we are always trying to manipulate sati. That's a form of wrong practice, when we are trying to induce it. Like we've all been through the sort of thing of staring at objects, wondering, you know, trying to make the visible object appear. That's a kind of wrong practice. But there are many, many others, and sometimes it can be very, very subtle. Extremely subtle. So every time we drop wrong practice, there is a moment, a possibility then, for sati. Regardless of whether it is wrong practice that we are clinging to desperately, or whether it is more subtle wrong practice. How can there be sati if we don't drop that wrong practice at least for a moment? If one changes one's whole lifestyle, locks oneself away from people, and does strange things that one would normally never do, that's gross wrong practice. Not subtle at all. Now you would normally never walk in slow motion, would you? Never. But if you think that by not walking in slow motion you're going to have wisdom, then you might devote a day or a week or a year, depending on how strongly you want to get wise. Then that would be gross wrong practice. Subtle wrong practice is perhaps not so easily described, because you can't see it. You can't tell when somebody else has got it. The things they say, the things they do, wouldn't be strange or peculiar. But you can see it in yourself. All of us can see it in ourselves when we are, do you know what I mean when I say striving to induce sati? What about those moments when you feel that you would like to be aware of feeling? What about when you hear somebody talking about different kinds of feeling, or someone says, well, it's important to be aware of feeling. Doesn't that sometimes, because of our desire, condition us to, in our mind, sort of look for feeling? if we don't really know, it's moha. But the way you describe it, it sounds very much to me like just a level of lopa. When we are, especially if you are talking about how it seems like it's a kind of an awareness, and yet we know it's not. That's definitely wrong practice. When we're sitting down quietly, fairly peacefully, and we just have this feeling that we're sort of aware. Sort of aware. That's a kind of attachment. It's not moha. Not pure moha. I think you've got some fairly good examples there of different types of subtle wrong practice. When you try to direct sati to some part of the body, from your fingertips to your neck to or from your eye door to your ear door to your body door. That's a kind of wrong practice. No. You can be aware of it. Wrong practice is in reality two jetasikas. Chitti and lopa together when we have wrong practice. Not just ordinary lopa, but wrong understanding too at that moment. Wrong understanding that you can control, you can direct, that you can choose the object that you will be aware of. Now I'll be aware of my defilement. Now I'm angry, so I must be aware of dosa. Why? Who says? There are other realities besides dosa when one is angry. Admittedly, you can't be aware of anger when there isn't anger. But when there is anger, there is not only anger. There are other realities too. And if we think we have to be aware of anger because, or dosa, because we're upset, we have to be. That's a kind of wrong practice too. And at that moment, there isn't any awareness, is there? Awareness can arise at any time. It doesn't mean because we're very busy doing something complicated that there cannot be awareness. There can be awareness of whatever appears. Because when we are doing complicated things, we also sometimes hear sound. But we shouldn't think that, let's say we are doing something complicated, something very tricky with our hands, and we are concentrating on it, and then we hear a sound from outside. We shouldn't think that that means there is awareness at that moment. It only means there's hearing. Because anybody, you ask anybody who's never heard about awareness, if when they're doing something complicated, do they also sometimes hear sounds? And they think, yes. Everybody can have other objects of consciousness when they're concentrating on something in particular. Anybody. But to have awareness of either the sound or of the hardness or of the color or of seeing or of thinking, that's different. And there can be awareness of any of those realities because they are real. In the very, very beginning, when sati is so weak, then when somebody urges us to be aware, is there any reason why awareness should arise? And lots of good reasons why the desire to be aware should. But later on, as awareness is developed more and more and more, when people urge us to be aware, it can be a condition for awareness. Without having to want to be aware because somebody's saying be aware, there can be just awareness without wanting to. Or there may be both. There may be wanting to, and then awareness of wanting to. Or there may be awareness and clinging to awareness and then wanting to be aware more. Maybe a moment of right practice followed by a moment of wrong practice. Who knows? But in the beginning, if people say be aware, although that makes us want to be aware because we've accumulated a lot of desire and not so much sati, we should be careful here. I don't mean that when they say be aware, that is the condition for us to want it. The condition for us to want it is the lopa. But it might seem to us that those words make us want it. No, of course it's not like that. But anyway, when we hear those words and then we feel that we want to be aware, we can't stop that. We can't help it. But let there be more awareness of those moments too. Let's not just get bogged down in the desire to be aware when we hear the words be aware. Let's not fill ourselves up with doubts of how can I be aware when we hear the words be aware. Yes, a reminder, because don't we need them? Don't we need them? You think how many hours go by sometimes when there isn't any level of awareness? Not even at the level of thinking. Even when people are talking about awareness, even in Dhamma discussions, think how many moments go by when there isn't even awareness at the level of thinking, let alone of characteristics. When we sit down and listen to Dhamma full of self, I'm sorry, it doesn't mean there cannot be some gusala actually, like you may have moments of thinking about the Dhamma and understanding certain aspects of it, but I think you know what I mean. It's a common experience, I'm sure. If somebody reminds us to be aware, let us not abuse that opportunity to be reminded at some level or other. If somebody says to us it's just conditions, let's not treat those words as play words. Like you can almost make a joke about it. You can say, well, it's just conditions. And, well, there are conditions for us to make a joke out of it, but if we're going to make a joke out of it, let's, in addition to making a joke out of it, allow ourselves to take the hint. It can. Let us take the hint. I remember Jill and Tony saying to me that in the past when they used to work together on jobs together, even though they do have a harmonious way of working together, there'd be tension. They would have their little clashes when they were getting some job done. But when they were doing this work on the stenciling, and they were together again doing a lot of work in a short time, they said the tension came again, the clashes came again. But if it wasn't Tony saying to Jill, it's just conditions, it was Jill saying to Tony, it's just conditions. And they took the reminder seriously. They took the reminder seriously. They didn't just jab each other and say, well, it's only conditions. But they helped one another. Because this comes when we realize more and more the value of sati. This is sattaka sampatanya, the first level of panya, that begins to see more and more the true value of being aware. We may think we know already. I know sati is valuable. Of course I know sati is valuable. What do you think I'm studying Dhamma for? What do you think I'm a monk or a novice for? I didn't know that sati was valuable. But how much do we know the value of sati? At what level do we realize its value? Enough to take reminders in the right way? Enough to benefit from the words we hear? There are many levels of sattaka sampatanya, many levels of knowing the value of sati. It grows deeper and deeper. But if we think we already know, how can it grow? How can we know better, more deeply? Even if the person who says it's only nama, even if you know that person has said it as a joke, can't you still take the message? If that person isn't saying it as a joke, then well, all the better, because you can rejoice in his good intention as well. But that kind of understanding cannot arise in someone who has not yet begun to see the value of sati and who has no satta or faith in the fact that it is only conditioned namas and rupas. If I'm lucky, then while I'm sitting here, I might now and again be able to remember that it's only nama and rupa because I have some confidence that it's true. But if one is fighting against that, then it's impossible for one to be reminded of something that one has never yet accepted. One doesn't have any confidence that it's true. So nothing can remind that person, nothing anybody says. If you say to that person even, it's just nama and rupa, those words won't bring a response in that person because the acceptance of that fact, the beginning, the growing acceptance of that fact isn't there. The germ, the seed hasn't yet even begun. If that person is fighting against the whole idea of developing satipatthana now, naturally. Maybe in theory, that person will say, I know it's only nama and rupa. But there are two levels of theory. There's the theory, two types of knowing it in theory. You know in theory that it's only nama and rupa, but you've never ever understood even the beginning level of practicing, of being aware. Because a person can think it's only nama and rupa and then go and walk very slowly. A person can say it's only nama and rupa and do all sorts of things that aren't even the beginning of the right practice. And then there is the person who knows it's nama and rupa in theory but is beginning actually, at some level or other, to let awareness arise naturally in his daily life. Any time, any place. And in those words, those theories, that theory, even though it's still theory, has some bearing on his life. Some bearing, at least. Even if he's still got lots of wrong practice, maybe if he still wants to try out new methods, or maybe if he still can be led down the garden path here and there, there's still moments when it's possible to capitalize on the theory that he has learned. Because we're all of us going down the garden path from time to time. It's just that some of us have never realized that we're going down the garden path. That's when there's trouble. You don't know. So, in fact, when we are sitting here, and someone says something rude or unpleasant or aggravating or false, and we think to ourselves, no, it's only nama and rupa, really. If that person could only see it was nama and rupa, it'd be all right. Now, if we at that moment could see that the person we're talking about, that we think should see things as nama and rupa, is only nama and rupa, then instead of us wishing that people wouldn't say things or that they should see things this way or why can't they be more relaxed or why won't they listen, we ourselves can have some level of sati and realize that there must be conditions for people to speak in that way, to think in that way, to have such ideas, such views. Must be. Can't happen otherwise. Beg your pardon? If we are not aware of a characteristic, it must be a kind of thinking. On the other hand, maybe I should say one thing. It doesn't mean that every time we have sati that the characteristic is just bright and clear with no... It doesn't mean that we have clear, penetrating understanding every moment of being aware. No. But still, thinking is not the same as being aware of a characteristic. even though the characteristic doesn't cannot possibly appear clearly in the very beginning. At the moment of knowing the characteristic, we can't know anything else except the characteristic. But we shouldn't get that mixed up with this idea that if we don't know what's going on, then we've got suffering. Because there are many people who think that if they listen to somebody talking and they can't understand what he's saying, that they must have a lot of suffering. I have heard this point of view. Like, in some of Nina's letters, we read about a correspondent who told Nina how delighted he was that he couldn't recognize people anymore. He said, I cannot recognize my father anymore. Is that sucky? Nobody can tell you if you have sucky. Nobody can say, yes, that's it. It would be wrong and unfair and impossible. So all I can say at this moment is to point out that even though it's true that at the moment of sati, you know only the characteristics, let us not think, therefore, that every time we don't know the meaning of something, that we have sati. That would be very wrong. Beg your pardon? Let me put it this way. It's more important at the moment of awareness to know what you did experience than to know what you didn't experience. Even though it's true at that moment that you do not know anything else except the characteristics. How do you know that you don't know what the person said? How do you know? Because you know the characteristics. So it is by knowing the characteristics that one knows there is suffering. That's how one knows that one didn't know anything else, because there was just the characteristics. Not a person, not anything, but this one characteristic, whatever it was. So one cannot prove that one has awareness because one doesn't know this and one doesn't know that and one doesn't know that. But one will know the characteristic because one knows the characteristic at that moment. One thing I have found very helpful in my life is some words perhaps written by Kunlina in one of her books. Spoken by Kunsichin, I think, too. Yes. Very simple, nothing very fancy. Just that if one does not have a little more understanding in one's life, a little more right understanding and detachment, then one can be sure that one's going the wrong way. Maybe you sit the other way around. If you want to know if you're going the right way, there are two things to look for. Do you have a growing understanding of the realities that constitute your daily life? To some degree at least. And is there more detachment in your life? If you just keep taking everything for self all the time, you can't say that there is detachment in your growing detachment in your life. If you take everything very, very seriously, the opposite of taking things seriously doesn't mean having a good sense of humor necessarily, but if you take things too seriously, I don't think you can say that that matches up with the idea of having more detachment in one's life. Not the way we use to take things seriously now as an idiom. I don't mean to have gusala, I mean to be clinging to concepts and goals and unrealizable goals. It must be like this. How can it be like that if conditions have made it something else already? If conditions are such that you have let yourself down and done something you wish you'd never done and didn't think you could do, well, it's happened because there are conditions for it. If there weren't conditions for it, it couldn't have happened. Oh, certainly. Yes. The goal is to be aware, to understand the truth. And one has other goals too in one's daily life, to do things nicely, to be successful in this way and in that way, to get something finished by a certain date. Certainly, lots and lots of goals. But if you set yourself a goal, say, to finish writing your letter today,
and somebody comes along to interrupt you, and you know that you won't be able to get it finished. If one doesn't have, well, I mean, this could very easily be a condition for all kinds of unwholesomeness. You could be angry at the person, or just irritated, or with that person, or with yourself. It depends. The same, you know, with Dhamma study. I've mentioned this before, and I think it's very important. We have plans to read a book, to read a certain chapter, or, and we have a visitor. And you think, oh, why doesn't this person go away? I want to get on with my Dhamma study. This is infuriating, because I know that if I study Dhamma, I can have more gusala, but I've got to sit here and put up with all this rubbish. That's another aspect too. But I was thinking about how when we had our idea of how we should live if we are going to practice Dhamma. It means we must get into our study, we must read. We have all these areas of what we call kusala that we want to do. And when people come in and interfere with that, so that we can't read our books and do the things that we think are going to bring us all the sati and all the kusala that we want, then we have a lot of dosa. This would not be detachment, because sati can arise any time. And when there's somebody sitting in front of you talking to you, it doesn't matter what they're saying. It's only nama and rupa. It doesn't mean you won't have dosa. You may have a lot of dosa. You may be very unhappy. But there can be awareness of that too. There can be. There really can be. And if there is, it's wonderful. Because we can sit down with our Dhamma book for 5 hours and not have an ounce of awareness. Yes, why not? So this would be taking things too seriously. This would be clinging to, could we say clinging to, I don't know, Dhamma, clinging to Gusala, I don't know. But it's clinging. Yes, getting results, achieving something. So if one finds that little by little, here and there are signs of a little more detachment, then take heart. Carry on. And it even goes down on levels, not only levels higher, but levels grosser than that too. How can you make giving happen, really? Sure, you may say, well, now I'm going to give, and I give. But in reality, if it happens, it happens because of conditions. Anything could get between your intention and the actual act. It's easier to see when you talk about that moment of suddenly understanding something, but it does apply too, just to giving. And to restraint, to everything in our lives. Oh, I don't mean that you can't say to people, go away, or please come back another day, or I'm very busy with my Dhamma. If there are conditions for you to do that, you will. And you could do it kindly, or you could do it roughly. You might be rude. You might say, with a kind of a tone in your voice, something a little bit sarcastic. But on the other hand, you could be very, very kind about the situation. You could realize, now what am I going to do? This person is talking a lot of nonsense. I don't want to listen to it. It's not benefiting me, and in fact, it's not benefiting that person. Now I wonder if there's some way, something I can say or do, that will not only be to my benefit, but might also help this person to have less of this kind of a gusala citta. I wonder if I can think of a topic of conversation that this person would be interested in, that would be more profitable for him to talk about and listen to. So then your whole attitude, instead of being one of how can I get rid of this person, how can I get back to my book, it's already gusala, instead of agusala, the selfish desire and aversion. You're already thinking in a very constructive way, and you're not annoyed by what he's saying anymore, because your mind is busy thinking out some ingenious way to give him gusala, if you can. knowing full well that he mightn't be able to have it, if you can realize that too, because otherwise you come up with your ingenious little scheme and he won't buy it. And then you'll be angry because you think how nice you've been and how he didn't do what he should have done. But you'd be surprised at how helpful you can be when you think not only of yourself, but think, well, that person's not benefiting from his gossip. Like if somebody's running somebody down, you might be having a lot of aversion and just not liking that person because they're running other people down. But when you realize the damage that that person's doing to himself, you may be able to find just the right word to bring that person to his senses. Or if not that, at least to take him into something else. You might when you know that this kind of speech, Dhammabhata, can bring rebirth in a lower plane, then it's better to have him talk with attachment, isn't it? Some kind of talking that's not going to give him rebirth in a lower plane, so you could ask him to tell you about the movie he saw today or something. And when he's telling you about the movie, if he's not lying, it's not Dhammabhata, whereas while he's gossiping and running people down, it could very easily be Dhammabhata. So you may be able to help that person to have less agusala, less strong agusala. And you may be able to wean him off the movies into some other subject that's even more, not even attachment, but which is agusala. You may be able to go from gossip to the movies to giving food to the monks in the morning, say, getting up early in 3 or 6 or 9 easy stages. Who knows? Maybe you won't. Maybe you won't get past first base. Maybe you won't listen to anything you say and just want to go on gossiping. But there's no limit to the number of things you might say or do depending on our accumulation. And it can be less so. If you have an appointment, why shouldn't you say to the person, I have an appointment? No reason. Why not? But some situations are difficult. Some situations your accumulations won't let you say that. Or you feel that the person is someone that you can't say that to. It might be somebody who's very high-ranking or very... We dare not say anything. We might feel it's not our position. Then how do we cope? Anyway, whatever the situation, whether you say I've got an appointment or whether you don't, whether you help that person with crucial conversation or whether you sit there with lots of aversion, that can arise in each and every one of those situations, because it's just different kinds of nama and rupa, whatever's going on. So if we try less to control and have things our way, they can be more effective. Things are the way they are already. Now, we can change. It's happened. It's sound already. It's hearing already. It's not liking already. It's not understanding already. How can you change it? And don't forget that there can be sati now, too. This is no different from yesterday or tomorrow. The realities that we couldn't control yesterday, they're no different from the realities that we can't control now. The seeing and the hearing that arose yesterday that were arising because of conditions, they're no different from the seeing and the hearing that are arising now because of conditions, and that have fallen away already because of conditions. The defilements that you might realize you have now are no different from the defilements you'll have tomorrow that will arise again because of conditions. But aren't you?
Dhammadeo at Wat Thang Vipassana, the 26th of October
2518. Now, the difference between the moment of being aware and the moment of not being aware.
The moment with sati is the same as the moment without sati. How can you find out?
Sometimes I have the moment of being aware something, but it is, I want to say, some, not just one moment, but very soon, it seems to be a certain moment, in certain time, but I'm seeing it is not being aware of the characteristics, but it seems to be a kind of concentration.
This is a very quantity of the
And let's get those two terms straightened out. You just said it seems like it might be a kind of concentration, and Belinda just said a different level of consciousness. Let's understand clearly what we mean by different level of consciousness. Let's understand clearly what we mean by different level of consciousness. You agreed with her, you said yes. So could you explain what you mean by a different level of consciousness?
I also do not want to say that it is quite different from normal consciousness, but it is kind of concentration.
Now, do you mean that being aware is a kind of concentration, or the experience you have, you think, might be a kind of concentration? Do you mean that when there is awareness, that it is a type of concentration? Or do you mean that when you have this kind of experience, it is a kind of concentration? Are you sure that this is sati or not?
It is not only sati, and it is not only apsala.
Different moments then. How do you know that some moments are dusala and some moments are adusala?
Because it is some moment, certain time, certain time, and there must be attachment. And
why must there be attachment? But you say there must be, because every moment of our life there must be
attachment. Because it is clear for me that there are attachments to
Why can't I be happy when there's a difference?
Are we sure we know what Gananda means, though? Mm-hmm. Certainly. There has to be. And then, yes. No, I mean, there has to be awareness of agusala in our lives because there's so much of it. There has to be awareness of all realities, and we can't say, well, I'm going to be aware of agusala, and I don't mind being aware of seeing, hearing, color, sound, but as for agusala, well, I won't bother, or I can't, or I need not. One has to be aware of all realities. I think agusala plays such a large role in our lives. We have to be more aware of all those many, many moments when there is no suffering, in other words. At any level, when there is agusala.
Yeah,
In other words, I don't know if this is what it seems to me like you might be saying. In other words, that as you are more aware of things like, well, look at wrong practice, which says so much. If you're aware of wrong practice, then you know that at that moment it wasn't suffering. Whereas previously you might have been thinking you had a lot of suffering. And if you have true suffering, you can see that many moments perhaps which you thought were suffering were really other types of realities, for example, attachment or wrong practice or wrong understanding, or which one can confuse very easily with suffering. Like, we don't know exactly what moments you're talking about exactly, because only you can know from your experience. But we all know what it's like to be wanting to know the object. We all know what it's like to be concentrating on an object in some way. And those moments are not moments of sati, although we sometimes forget that. Obviously we're forgetting it at the time we're doing it, but even we're doing it is because we think that's the way. Yes, with every system.
Right, okay. One point is larger than another. But these long, what to him seems like long moments of concentration, such as can arise many times, after like many moments, which may seem like a long moment.
No. And this is important. It couldn't seem like a long moment if there were such a. Yes? That's
so
right.
Because
many different moments of sati, knowing the same object or different objects, in particular knowing different objects, means that different characteristics can appear to let you know that nothing continues. Yes, but that's an advanced stage.
And at the same time, concentration arrives.
Yes, but it doesn't have the characteristic that we normally associate with concentration. The concentration we are familiar with is the concentration that arises either with agusala, or for some people, with certain types of dusala, but only certain types of people. It's a very rare thing. In other words, on the path to developing jhana or something, full tranquility. And this is not, although it's the same jeta sutra, because it arises with different accompanying jeta sutras, so its own characteristic is influenced, altered. The kind of concentration we are used to is the kind associated with deliberately wanting to concentrate on a particular object, which sati never does. Never. But that is the characteristic of concentration with which we are all most familiar. And when there is sati, the characteristic of concentration doesn't appear. If it appears, it appears as the object of sati. And if it appears as the object of sati, it appears as just another type of nama that has arisen already by conditions, and it doesn't have anything peculiar about it that you can say, well, that's some kind of concentration. you don't have to know the name of anything at that moment. But so you wouldn't have to say, now this is the characteristic of concentration appearing. For example, what Ananda is talking about being aware, presumably a different object, and yet he says that often when he's aware of different objects, it seems like a kind of concentration. Now, if one is truly aware of different objects, then the characteristic of concentration has got no business appearing. What should appear is just different characteristics, not concentration. So if you're, excuse me, let me just add a little bit more here to tie it up. If you're aware of sound, sound should appear, not concentration. If we are aware of hearing, then hearing should appear, not concentration. So to be aware of different objects, and for every moment of awareness, it should, for it to seem like there's a kind of concentration, then we can be sure that at those moments when it seems like a kind of concentration, that there isn't, in fact, awareness of a characteristic. Not at that moment.